Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast again this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Brennan Morella. Brennan is the Chief Commercial and Operating Officer for a fast-growing disruptive company in the orthopedic space called Osseo. He has a 30-year career experience in working in the medtech industry and helping drive growth. He's got some great lessons that he's learned in his career, and he's going to share just some of his insights today. Looking forward to today's conversation with Brennan.
I guess first off, Brennan, could you, for our audience, can you give us just a little bit of your background, a little bit of your career story?
Yeah, I've worked, I've been in med tech for over 30 years. I can't believe I'm actually that old. I might look like it, but I don't feel like it. So I've worked for big and small companies. I worked for public and private companies. I actually got my start out of college with Gallo Wine. So I did consumer. I did pharma for a couple of years. And those were kind of my entrances into medical device sales, which is where I started my career. And that was at AngioDynamics. At the time, AngioDynamics was a $2 million company, a little startup, about 10 sales reps. Of course, now it's a major publicly traded company, and they've done a great job. So I started my career there in sales and sales management. I then went to Medtronic. I spent most of my career at Medtronic. I was there for 12 years. I was very fortunate to be in the endovascular aneurysm repair space, where we launched a life-saving new therapy, a very disruptive technology, and that was a really rewarding experience. I would say that's probably where my career really it took off in terms of a trajectory. I was given an opportunity to move from sales and sales management into a marketing role as a developmental opportunity. And I moved my family across the country from North Carolina to California. And I did a marketing rotation as a product manager. And then eventually, a couple years later, found myself as the head of marketing, which I really enjoyed. And then I was the VP of US sales for 5 years for that business. So I kind of went back and forth from sales and marketing and was able to really enjoy that experience. After Medtronic, I was recruited to Covidien when Covidien was building out a vascular sector, and was recruited there. And I had a number of roles there, including general manager of their endovascular, arterial, and venous businesses. After Covidien, I did a little bit of a turnaround opportunity called Surgical Specialties Corporation. They had just brought in a new leadership team and a couple of new board members, and I was the chief commercial officer. And our mission was to get the company growing again, increase profitability, and to sell the company. And we were able to do that. And after about 2 years, we sold the company and had a nice exit for our shareholders. And that company has now been rebranded Corza Medical. And they're really doing some great things over there. That gave me an opportunity to really go and do a startup, a true startup as in a leadership role. And so I joined Osseo 6 years ago. And Osseo is a U.S.-Israeli orthopedic fixation implant startup. We make strong and biointegrative implants that turn into bones. So we take implants made out of minerals. They turn into bones so that you don't have to have permanent metal fixation in your body to hold bones together, which really only have to do that for about 6 weeks. You don't need metal implants for the rest of your life to just heal a fracture in 6 to 8 weeks. So we're trying to disrupt a 150-year-old metal market. And I'm having the most fun I've had in my career doing that. Right now, we're one of the fastest growing companies in orthopedics. So I love working. I've had a really great career. I enjoy working with great people to build and fix things. And just fortunate I've been given those opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it sounds like an exciting new way to think about orthopedics. And I've talked to enough people that have metal in them that probably wish it was bone, for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. So knowing what you know now, what advice, if you're able to spin back time talk to a 22-year-old Brennan, what advice would you give him?
Well, I would say get into your piggy bank and buy as much Apple, Amazon, Tesla, yeah, Microsoft stock as you can. Yeah. Believe me, my piggy bank wasn't big back then. I would not be working today. But actually, I think I might be afraid to tell him too much. Because I wouldn't want to bias the journey too much. And, you know, mistakes that I've made along the way, I think you need to make some mistakes in order to be a more effective leader. Sure. But if I had to pick something, I would say, I was pretty keen on promotions earlier in my career, kind of moving up the ladder, and, I probably could have been more patient. I could have probably listened more. Probably could have enjoyed the process more. And I feel like every role you're in, you should really learn as much as you can in that role before you move up to the next role, because eventually you're going to be managing people in those roles. And the more understanding you have of that role, the more effective you're going to be in terms of being a coach. So I would say those are probably some things that I would tell myself back then.
Any advice that you received early on that you, looking back on, you should have ignored?
I've had people say, stay in your swim lane, you know, pick a function like sales and stay in sales, which I that's the way I used to think. That was my mentality. And then when I went into marketing and spent time in another function, it really opened my eyes to the fact that, the more you understand other functions in a medical device company, whether you're in that function or not, I think the more effective teammate you're going to be, collaborator, problem solver, and leader. And I thought it was important back then to try to differentiate myself and to really try to be an expert in both sales and marketing, because I think to be a good commercial leader, you have to have a deep understanding of both of those. I would also say the other thing that I was told maybe was to stay in one sector of med tech, because you tend to build a reputation, you build a lot of equity with industry people, with customers. And I think that makes a lot of sense. But what I found going to other sectors, because I spent most of my time in cardiovascular, but I've been in a lot of other sectors now, and now in orthopedics 6 years, you do learn a lot of tricks from folks in those sectors. You learn a lot from these people that have had success in these different parts of med tech that you can take with you to your next assignment. And you also bring a bag of tricks with you that maybe they will appreciate coming from another sector of orthopedics. So I think it's important to differentiate your career and have some diverse experiences. And so that would be advice I would ignore.
So was your first leadership position at Gallo? Did you have a leadership role there, or?
I did. I was a frontline sales manager. So I was a sales rep, and I got promoted, you know, a year into the job, and I got to manage other people.
Yep.
And then I, you know, did the same thing in AngioDynamics. I went back as a sales rep to be in medical devices. And then I soon thereafter became a sales manager. So those were kind of my first two management roles.
So before you moved into those roles, what do you wish you would have known earlier?
I would say in terms of putting a team together, mm-hmm. And these are, I mean, obviously these are things that I've done and I tell people to not do them. But I would say overweighting experience and ignoring red flags around intangibles, putting too much emphasis on whether or not someone had interventional radiology experience or orthopedic experience versus, tone, attitude, communication skills, EQ, passion, things like that. I think it's easier to train someone on a therapy or a market than train someone on how to be a great leader or how to be a great salesperson. I would say the other thing about building a leadership team is, you know, you got to hire people that compliment you. And you need to hire people that are willing to tell you when you're wrong or have a better idea. So, I think those are probably some of, as I think back to maybe some hiring that I've done that I wish I could do over, it was because I maybe overweighted experience and ignored some of those other things that are just so important.
So moving from a large company like a Medtronic to a startup organization, what are some things that you've that were the biggest adjustments for you, or that you, again, making that change, what have you learned?
Yeah. Well, at first there was no one to delegate to. Yeah. Who's going to make the brochures? I'm like, I guess it's me. You know, I think it's, I think learning to be a doer again, learning to wear every hat, being willing to empty the trash in the office, learning to work with little, you know, very little resources at the beginning versus coming from a huge company where you have $100 million budget. Suddenly you have no budget for things. So I think learning how to stretch your resources, how to beg, borrow, and I'm not going to say steal, but how to beg and borrow and ask for favors and things like that to get the company off the ground. Probably the biggest change was just learning how to raise money and I guess all of the, you know, the pitfalls of that, you know, how long that takes, the work it takes to raise money, even if for a company as exciting as us, it's still a lot of work. So I would say those were some of the really key learnings that, you know, you had to adjust to early on.
So talking about raising money, I think a lot of times leaders in startups don't understand the amount of time that they're spending in that those initial times in the company just to keep the fuel tank full to be able to do what you need to. What are some things that you've learned around that? And what advice would you give somebody that's out there trying to raise money for a startup?
I would say if you have the luxury, choose your investors like you would choose your spouse. They're really important, and they can really help you become very successful if you have the right, you know, the right investment team and the right board around you. I think if folks can sniff out when there's inexperience or when there's a fantasy forecast that you're presenting them very quickly. And I think when you get a board pulled together that probably includes some independent board members that have industry experience and investor groups, I think it's important that you understand their strengths, what you can learn from them. I think it's important to not overpromise and underdeliver, and to do what you say you're going to do. Because if you do, it's easier to raise money from insiders. If they believe in the team and they believe in you know, the story that you're telling in terms of what the future may look like.
So talk about, I think you did a topic on one of your podcasts that you were on a while back, the importance of resilience, and talk a little bit about that topic.
Yeah. I think when you're talking about in terms of hiring people, in terms of building a team.
Yep.
It's a challenging world right now around hiring. There's a lot of choices and there are a lot of less people in the marketplace looking for jobs. And it's important that you try to find people that are willing to hang through some tough times and through adversity. As long as they kind of believe in the team and the mission and what they're doing, I think you can get them through, you know, difficult times. When you're in a startup, there are times when you don't know if you'll get more money. There are setbacks. There are things that happen. So hiring people that are resilient, they have a resilient mindset, is very, very important. You know, when I see resumes and, you know, someone has, you know, 10, 15 jobs and they're all like a year, 2 years, unless there's a great story there, I try to stay away from those folks because I feel like, if there's any adversity, they're going to take off. So I think it's really important to find people that will hang and keep their, you know, keep their eye on the prize. And I think at Osseo now we've done that.
Good. So any books that you recommend to other leaders that have had an impact on you?
This is going to sound unbelievably unoriginal, but I'm going to give you a couple that I love that I'm sure most people have read that I think you probably interview. I'm a little bit obsessed with creating and keeping momentum. And I think there's a couple of great books that talk about adoption and talk about building cultures and teams. So Good to Great by Jim Collins. I'm sorry, that's a timeless classic. I'm sure some of the examples in his books are a little dated, but the concepts are still really, really great. The flywheel, the hedgehog, we talk about a lot in our current company. I really love that book. And I've read it. I try to look at it once a year and just kind of peek at it and try to remember some of the key points. In terms of driving adoption, I love The Tipping Point by Gladwell. I like Crossing the Chasm by Jeffrey Moore. I'm actually reading, I'm reading this book right now called Contagious. It's pretty good. Okay. And that's really about getting things to catch on, getting trends, starting movements, driving adoption, but doing it in a way that is just like a force multiplier. So I really like books. As a commercial guy, I like books that kind of teach me how to drive, you know, grow through trends and you know, rabid fans.
Sure. Good. No, Contagious. I haven't, I don't think I've heard anybody mention that one yet. So, and
that's by Jonah Berger.
Jonah Berger.
I'm actually haven't even finished it, but it's pretty good.
Okay.
It's a good, it's a quick read. It's not, not too thick.
Okay.
But some great ideas on, you know, the impact of social currency and things like that to get things to catch on.
Okay.
How to drive that.
Any favorite quotes that you refer to?
I think one I used the other day was never waste a good crisis. I think Ronald Reagan said that. I think anytime you have a setback at a company, whether it's a recall or a quality issue or product failure, whatever it might be, I think whenever you have a crisis, it's really an opportunity to show kind of what you're made of. It's an opportunity to problem solve and to reinforce the idea that the leaders have integrity. I like Culture Eats Strategy for Breakfast by Drucker. That's a favorite. You could have the best strategy in the world, but if you don't have the right people doing the right things, executing, you're not going to be successful. Back to Jim Collins, I like first who, then what. You know, that's the, you know, your team is way more important than what you're going to, you know, what you're going to do, how you're going to approach the market. So I think those are some of my favorites.
So as you've moved into kind of that, those first, you know, 3 months on a, in a role, as far as for leadership, what are some things that you think leaders should be paying attention to those first, you know, 90 days to 100 days of leadership?
I think it might be slightly different if you come in from the outside versus being an insider, but you probably ought to have some similar tactics when you take on a new role. I would think one of them would be to be obsessed with understanding all stakeholders, but especially employees initially, understanding what are they proud of, what do they like about the company, and what would they do differently? What do they feel needs to be changed? And really kind of going on a very rapid listening tour where you're talking to as many key stakeholders in the company as you can to really get a good feel for what is the mood? What are the things holding us back? What are the things people are excited about? So you can play to your strengths and you can begin trying to get some quick wins on fixing some of the things that are barriers or some of the things that maybe are culturally not ideal or structurally not ideal, whatever those things might be. I think it's so important to get in, show people you're listening, come up, get some quick wins, get a few good solutions out there. And then build on your momentum as you go forward in trying to transform a business, or maybe it doesn't need to be transformed. Maybe it just needs to be incrementally better, whatever that might be.
No, that's great. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Well, we're in Florida, so I do a lot of fishing in the Gulf now. So I'm learning how to be a deep sea fisherman, I guess. So when it's been as hot as it has this summer, we've been fortunate to catch some nice grouper and snapper and wahoo. So I'm learning to fish. So that's been a lot of fun. Otherwise, just being outside and being in nature is kind of how I decompress.
Okay. Very cool. So what's the biggest thing you've caught in the ocean so far?
Oh, geez. It's probably the wahoo, but I think I caught a grouper that probably weighed almost as much as the wahoo.
Okay.
I'm still working on my first tuna in the Gulf. I haven't caught that yet. but the fishing's fantastic here.
Yeah, very cool. So parting advice that you would give to a new leader?
I would say for a leader to really motivate their employees beyond the typical ways you motivate an employee and to inspire them is to not underestimate the power of purpose. I think a lot of people right now are really hungry for meaningful work. I hear it all the time. It seems like it's always been important, but it seems like it's becoming more important these days. And I think as long as you can articulate a compelling vision, it's so important to be a great storyteller and really rally your team around what will the world look like if we're successful? You know, an exciting vision. Like at Osseo, we want to eliminate permanent hardware. It's problematic. We want to eliminate it. That's a big goal. That's going to take a while. But our team is really motivated around that. What will the world look like if we're successful? What does it mean for industry? What does it mean for doctors, patients? What does it mean for your resume? What does it mean for your financial situation? I think the more stories you can tell, the more you can paint a picture of a compelling vision and what the world will look like when you're successful as a team. I think you'll get incredibly motivated and fired up employees like we do here.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. Definitely wish you success with the company and all that you're doing. And how would somebody learn more about Osseo?
Thank you for asking. Go to osseo.io, OSSIO.io, our website. We just actually updated our website. So I'd love for you to go take a look at it if you're interested. But we have a really compelling technology, and it's just a pleasure to be a part of it.
Well, wish you continued success in all you're doing, and appreciate you taking time out to talk to us.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.